We are fortunate to say that Aaron David Miller has joined us a number of times over the last couple decades. Presently, Aaron is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He was a member of the Secretary of State's office for 24 years. He served six different secretaries of state, and he's always a great guest. And like all of our guests, he's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. This tweet, though, from Aaron a couple days ago certainly drew my attention and caused this phone call. This is from Aaron just a couple days ago. Nobody wants it and not predicting it, but we're closer than ever to something the Middle East has never seen before, a genuine regional war encompassing fronts in Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and even the Gulf. So, Aaron, it's always a pleasure to have you on. That is obviously a troubling, concerning, and informed tweet. How close are we?
Impossible to say, Ted. First of all, thanks for having me. As I mentioned, I'm not predicting it. Nobody wants it. Closer than ever means that there are two uncertain events yet to occur, which are impossible to predict, which could take us to the scenario that I identified. Number one, the nature of Iran and Hezbollah, as well as the other members of the so-called resistance against Israel, in retaliation for two strikes, two assassinations, one the Israelis claimed, a strike against a very senior Hezbollah commander, very close to the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, and the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Hamas's external leadership, its political bureau, which the Israelis presumably were responsible for but are not admitting. This has left Iran in a perilous position of having to try to respond to something that goes well beyond what they did April 13, 14, in which, again, in response to an Israeli strike on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps commander in Damascus, they responded with over 300 mm-hmm. high-trajectory weapons, cruise missiles, short-range ballistic missiles, attack drones, causing no damage. 99% of them never even made it into Israeli airspace. But this time, I suspect, having been humiliated and having their security system revealed to be essentially bankrupt, the Israelis apparently planted a remotely detonated explosive in an IRGC compound where Ismail Haniyeh was staying in the actual room in which he was staying.
And they planted it months and months before, right?
Exactly, remotely yeah. detonated, although the Iranians claim this was done by a standoff missile. So that leads to the first shoe, basically, and that is, what is the nature? What will be the nature of the Iranian response? Hezbollah's response, and remember, Hezbollah is in a position to do far more damage to the Israelis than Iran. It takes roughly, 12 minutes for a cruise missile to travel from Iran to Israel. It takes a matter of seconds for any of Hezbollah's high-trajectory weapons, and they have roughly 150,000 of them of varying ranges, lethalities, and precision, to strike Israel. So it's the Hezbollah response. It's the response from Iran. When it will come, what it will be is unclear. So that's the first issue. The second, of course, will be the Israeli response. And that's going to depend in large part, obviously, on the nature and the character and the comprehensiveness of Iran and its proxies' actions against Israel. So, again, not predicting it. Nobody wants it. But, again, closer than surely we've ever been.
So let me get to the first shoe, the response from either Iran, Hezbollah, or the coordination between the two. Are you surprised it has not happened yet? Or is it possible that one attempt was made and the Israelis already stopped it?
No, I think, remember in April when we saw an Iranian response, again, responding to an Israeli strike in Damascus, which occurred on April 1st. The Iranians waited 2 weeks before they launched these high-trajectory weapons at Israel. Haniyeh, the Hamas leader, was killed July 31. We're about 8 days in. The uncertainty, the sense of where and when we don't know, I suppose, is part of the Iranian playbook here. They also are facing a critically important decision. And I think the delay reflects their own uncertainty about how to respond. They need to demonstrate both competency, effectiveness, and they need to do serious damage. But they need to achieve all those objectives without tripping into a major confrontation, because the asymmetry of power between Israel and Iran favoring Israel is in terms of unmanned aerial vehicles, cruise missiles, drones, is asymmetrical in favor of Israel. And add to that the defensive capacities of two carrier strike groups, U.S. carrier strike groups, a number of warships with very sophisticated and aircraft fighters with very sophisticated anti-ballistic defensive capabilities, and the Iranians would be overmatched, to say the least. They do not want a regional war. But again, can they navigate the fine line between doing damage, but not too much damage, that would prompt an Israeli response? And again, the real problem, I suspect, is not Iran. It's the geography is destiny, Chad. And Hezbollah is much closer. They also, of course, have to worry about it because they're vulnerable to what would almost certainly be a massive Israeli strike should they do damage to infrastructure, civilian casualties, military bases. So that prompts a kind of escalatory cycle, which is why we can't rule it out. We can't rule a regional war out, even though I still believe it's not inevitable, and I think it can be avoided, but we'll see.
Aaron David Miller is with us right now, senior fellow at Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a phenomenal experience in this man's life, part of the Secretary of State's office, almost 25 years served, six different secretaries of state. You have been a part of negotiations where Netanyahu, he's right in the middle of it. You've observed him for decade after decade after decade. You've watched how he has reacted since October 7th. So if we get this, or it's probably when we get this Hezbollah attack, and when now he has to walk this line, and this line is also showing Israeli citizens that I'm going to respond with force like I have since October 7th, for the folks who want that, and also paying attention to a lot of the world who feel like he has went too far and that too many innocent civilians have died. How much trust do you have, if the attack takes place, that Netanyahu will respond with a global thought versus this is vengeance, I'm the leader of Israel, and I'm responding specifically in that manner?
You know, it's a very good question, and I guess I would start by answering it, saying this, that the organizing principle of Benjamin Netanyahu's life of late, certainly since October 7, and even before, is to maintain himself in power. He's on trial in a Jerusalem district court before three judges for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. If he loses power, that is to say, he ceases to become prime minister, he faces two possibilities. One, a conviction, and there's precedent there. Ehud Olmert, a former Israeli prime minister, served 16 months, I believe, in prison for just one of the charges that Netanyahu faces. Or alternatively, to negotiate for a plea bargain that would drive him out of power. So that means maintaining power. That means presiding over the most extreme right-wing government in Israel's history, with two ministers, Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, who are committed to annexing the West Bank in everything but name. And I suspect it's this devil's bargain that creates the most important constituency for Mr. Netanyahu. 64 seats. You need 60 plus one to govern. He's got 64. That coalition is very cohesive. And to quote one of our founding fathers, Sam Adams, we're either going to hang together or we're going to hang separately. There's no challenge right now. There are no effective opposition, despite massive public protests.
That's stunning.
Despite the efforts of the Netanyahu government before October 7th to rearrange the political furniture in Israel and emasculate the Supreme Court. And the fact is, Benjamin Netanyahu, since October 7th, has presided over the bloodiest single day for Jews since the end of the Nazi Holocaust and the greatest intelligence failure in Israel's history. And yet, Israel at war and a public exhausted but determined, I think, to support, to continue the prosecution of the war in Gaza against Hamas and to kill its senior leaders, has essentially acquiesced in his leadership. That said, like Iran and Hezbollah, and certainly let's include the Biden administration, Mr. Netanyahu does not want a major regional war. Continuation of the current war and the war of attrition against Hamas in Gaza, against Hezbollah, that serves his purpose. Because the minute these wars come to an end, the question of accountability is going to be raised within Israel. And that accountability, if you believe the polls, would result in his inability to form a new government. So I think he and the Knesset is now in recess, which means won't come back until the end of October. It means that Benjamin Netanyahu will be able to assess who the next president of the United States is. And he'll adjust his tactics and strategy accordingly. Elections in Israel, I would say, barring something that neither you nor I can divine, won't occur until probably the spring of 2025.
Aaron, you're great. Thank you so much. I know you're in heavy demand. We always appreciate the time. And be assured we'll reach out again.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Aaron David Miller. Just outstanding informed information. When you're part of the Secretary of State's office for 24 years, when you've worked with six different secretaries of state, both parties, you get great information. Speaking of Iran, speaking of Donald Trump, there is news regarding Donald Trump, Iran, and a Pakistani man and an assassination plot. Let's give you that information on the international news continuing when we come back and remind you next hour, two excellent guests tied to Tim Walz's selection today. Kurt Dowd, the former Speaker of the House. They worked together. They jousted at times on this show. Kurt Dowd has been kind to Tim Walz. At other times, he has absolutely crushed Tim Walz. What will Kurt Dowd say today? And Jacob Frey, the mayor of Minneapolis, who is going to be back in the news because of this Tim Walz selection and a lot of talk about the George Floyd riots. Jacob Frey talks to the media first with us at 2:35.